Broadcasting from the IBM Massachusetts Laboratory, this is Information Security Radio, where we talk about IT security by design. I'm your host, Caleb Bartlett. Welcome to the show.
Every day, 2.5 quintillion bytes of data are created, shared by more than 5 billion interconnected devices, and attackers are becoming more sophisticated. In an ever-connected world with escalated security needs, IBM has the expertise to secure a smarter planet. Protecting more than 6 million endpoints across 4,000 global clients, we manage more than 13 billion security events every day. We offer one of the world's broadest, most advanced, and most highly integrated enterprise security portfolios that is supported by our own security research organization. From big data to mobile and cloud environments, we provide advanced security intelligence for your organization. This is IBM Security. Are you protected?
Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
Hi, this is Caleb Barlow, and today we're going to be talking about securing cloud and mobile, and yes, it is possible. Before we get into that, I want to welcome you to the show and also thank our syndication partners, techpodcast.com, Blog Talk Radio, SecurityCast Radio, Podcaster, and iTunes, among several others. If you're listening on any of those channels, please make sure you comment on the show, let us know what you think about it, and if you're an iTunes subscriber, it really helps us out if you rate the show, no matter what you think of it, and certainly provide us a comment there. All right, so today we're going to be talking with David Drucker, who is a security solutions architect here at IBM. Hi, David. How are you?
Hello, Caleb. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's actually a nice sunny afternoon for a change here in Massachusetts. So securing cloud and mobile, I love the title. It is possible. You know, cloud and mobile have got lots of benefits that everyone from enterprises to consumers have looked at. We can improve our IT infrastructure. We can be more responsive. We can reduce costs. But all of these things, you know, require some challenges in terms of setting these environments up. And, you know, I think many people see C-level executives reluctant a little bit to move ahead and embrace these. What do you think is causing the issue, and what's your view on what to do about it?
Well, Caleb, I think you're definitely right. These executives that you're talking to, they have legitimate worries. The main issue that they see is they can't control these things. But let's take a little deeper look. According to Gartner Group, security is a top concern that companies have about private clouds, and it's in the top three for using public clouds. So what are the key risks of cloud systems? Well, private clouds and some public cloud systems have this characteristic of elasticity. This is what lets them rapidly provision new instances of complex applications and use them for a while, and then they just disappear when no longer needed. So they even can grow and shrink automatically in response to load. This is really one of the main benefits of the cloud computing model. So how can companies secure these things when they didn't exist a moment ago and then they exist now and they're about to disappear? So that's really their biggest issue. The basic solution that IBM is recommending is to really adopt our own security framework, which is something we've developed for all IT security. In fact, there's an excellent Red Book that describes this in some detail, which I think you're going to post after our call today. But the key way to deal with the elasticity problem is to put some parts of your security infrastructure directly in cloud instances. So when they spring to existence, the security is there, and when they disappear, it simply shuts off. So that's sort of one simple pattern that we were adopting.
So you're setting. I mean, what's fascinating about this is you're setting these environments up. in kind of real time. The, you know, if you think about security, not even that long ago, it was all about, you know, you think about your critical systems, you send an analyst out to say, okay, what do I need to add for security on this particular server? You know, the point here with this is you need the framework because this is all automated, right? I mean, I'm assuming in many of these cases there's no humans involved at all.
That's exactly right. The provisioning of clouds is done by intelligent orchestration systems, and they happen in response to the load. So you've got to have the security built in into it when it starts, and then you need to couple it with an overall cloud security system that can report what's happening in each individual cloud instance. That way you can understand what's happening in one versus another, and that might be very important if you do have a security attack against one instance as opposed to another.
So what are some of the kind of framework paradigms that you see here?
Well, in the IBM security framework, we have four security domains: people, applications, data, and infrastructure. The people, applications, and data parts are really not that different in cloud infrastructure than they are in regular computing systems. But infrastructure can be quite different because your cloud systems are virtualized, they run on hypervisors, and they have this overall cloud access model where they can be, you know, provisioned dynamically. And so you've got to have ways to ensure that all data flowing in and out of these cloud instances is monitored, for instance, for intrusion prevention. That's part of the infrastructure security pattern. Another key thing is the individual virtual machines that are part of your cloud need to have management of them from an endpoint management point of view. So you need to have some type of agent living on each of these operating systems to monitor the inventory of software and what security vulnerabilities, and to dynamically patch them. So products like IBM Endpoint Manager are very useful to provide this function. I want to say, over the top of all of this, you certainly then want to have a security intelligence server, which is gathering the data from all of these systems and making some analysis of it.
Okay, so we've got both the cloud side and you know, let's talk for a second here about mobile as well. So, you know, you mentioned mobile. Mobile fits in here in what ways?
Well, mobile is going to become the predominant method of accessing all IT systems, and since IT systems are going to be cloud systems, then cloud plus mobile really is going forward. That's what customers, what companies will be deploying. So the problem that mobile brings is really two things: the notion of customer-owned devices and employee-owned devices. And if it's a case of for instance, an employee-owned device, this is often called bring-your-own device, then how can a company be sure that this device has not been compromised or doesn't have other security problems? IBM, in fact, certainly does allow employees like you and me to own our own mobile phones and tablets and use them within IBM security infrastructure. So the key security pattern that we see there is the ability for IBM to be reasonably certain that only that employee is using that device, and we do that right now with strong passwords, but I see new solutions coming in that area. And then finally, you also have to limit the access of the device just to certain applications or certain parts of your network. And so there are a couple of technologies one can use in that area, but the main point is that you limit what the device can do, you secure the data that's on the device very carefully, and you keep a lot of the data that the device needs to access only on your servers in the cloud.
Okay. So these things are, your point is, these things are very intertwined in terms of our thinking about mobile and our thinking about cloud. There's a good chance that, you know, the cloud environment is what's standing behind that mobile application. So let's focus on the cloud side of this for a minute. You know, can you explain for folks the difference between, you know, we obviously have public clouds, private clouds, hybrid clouds. What's the difference in the security paradigm for each? What patterns do you see?
Yeah, this can be a complicated subject, but at base, a private cloud is one that is built by a business or another enterprise for their own use. And it's at root, a standard virtual environment, something like VMware or Linux KVM or even IBM ZVM, are ways to build virtualized environments. To make this into a cloud, you need to have additional machinery on top to provision and deprovision machines, monitor performance, manage the usage, and most importantly, from our point of view, manage the security of all of these virtualized systems. Public cloud, on the other hand, most common pattern is what's called software as a service. So examples of these are like Salesforce.com or Workplace. So that they can provide Workday, actually, who can provide either HR systems or sales-type systems available to companies without them installing any software at all. They really have different security problems. What companies increasingly have are hybrid clouds, where they have a private cloud, which will be their own compute infrastructure, and then some non-critical business services are provided by software as a service providers. And so linking these together is really the security challenge. So that's really what they're facing going forward.
That makes a ton of sense. So, as we go in and we secure these different frameworks and we really start to think about, not only the security posture, but the frameworks people are going to use, the automation, what about also the software as a service vendors like Salesforce, Workday, Intuit, a couple of them that you mentioned? I hear a lot about things like tokenization, encrypting these services. There's always concern about, not only my own security posture, but what's the security posture of the SaaS vendor that I've outsourced to. Can you talk a little bit about, SaaS specifically and how you handle this in a hybrid environment?
Yes. When you're selecting a cloud service provider, certainly you need to do due diligence about the quality of their own security and the audits that they subject themselves to. What I've been hearing is that most customers are requiring that they submit to a standard called SSAE 16, which is an auditing standard for testing, basic quality controls on their systems. And the federal government also has a new one called FedRAMP, which I think a lot of commercial companies will also require down the line. So number one is the cloud provider, are they really doing business the right way? Don't trust your data to someone who isn't. But from a point, and the other real key point is securing your access to this cloud. So, I can certainly just connect directly to Salesforce.com, but that's not really the model you want to use for your employees. You want to run them through some type of secure on-ramp where you've encrypted their access, you have authenticated them and authorized them for your particular application, and also you may want to be federating the identities of the people that use your cloud, that is to say your any private clouds you have, with these public software as a service providers. So there's a couple of technologies for the secure on-ramp. You can use something like IBM WebSphere Cast Iron, and for federating identity, something like IBM Security Federated Identity Manager will do this type of operation for you. As far as tokenization, it's a clever technique where a company does not actually store its real business data at the SaaS provider. Instead, there's this intermediary device that swaps out the real data for artificial data that mimics the structure of the real data. And this might be useful in some cases, but we think that the first steps in all cases are ensure that your cloud provider is a reputable provider and then secure that access the way I just described.
Many companies operate their own private cloud systems. So, we talked about kind of the SaaS environment where, you go to Salesforce, you put your stuff there in a third party. But, of course, many people are also running these types of systems with, in many cases, hundreds of cloud instances on premises, each running, in many cases, multiple virtual machines. How can they understand what software is installed on them and what the security vulnerabilities hold in each of these instances as they're coming up and down all over the place?
Well, as I said earlier, the one strategy is to have security that matches the elasticity of your cloud or of these clouds. And so this means having certain pieces of security infrastructure like like collection points for products like IBM Guardium. So, for instance, you can have a database tab on databases that live in the cloud. So they will collect the data from every cloud instance and then transmit it to your overall Guardium server. And then in some cases, especially when you're operating clouds that might be in different countries and you need to isolate the data, you may want to put a security intelligence server directly in each cloud instance. So this is also possible, and then you can collect data from all of those intelligence servers. And we're talking here about a product like IBM QRadar. Once you sort of understand what's in the individual clouds, then you can look at your entire security profile. So that's some of the patterns that you can use when you have hundreds of instances.
Now, when we're thinking of private cloud providers and the methods they use to now secure the work of their administrators and DBAs, you know, as some would call them, the custodians of the cloud, which, of course, is very analogous to what we've historically thought of in terms of privileged users that we'd have, you know, in kind of your typical on-premises solution and environment. Do these new privileged users, these new custodians of the cloud, do they open any new issues or concerns?
It's really pretty much the same pattern, but there are a couple of special aspects. Technology that springs to mind is to use something like a privileged identity management system. IBM and other vendors offer these. And this ensures the true identity of the system provider or the system administrator, regardless of where they're working in the cloud, is auditable. So we can find out when they log into a particular cloud, they might be using one identity, another cloud instance, a different identity, but using a system like a privileged identity manager, you can connect them to the real person. Similarly, there's tools that do the same thing for database, like IBM Guardium, which will monitor the usage of a DBA's access, say into a cloud database server, and again you'll see who it is and what they're doing. So this is similar again to standard IT, but then adapted to the cloud environment.
So if we kind of shift gears now to mobile, one of the more interesting things that came up in IBM's semi-annual X-Force report, which talked in depth about mobile, was their view, when this is our own IBM research team, was that mobile devices should actually become more secure than traditional devices, potentially as early as 2014. It's a rather bold prediction, but I think there's some interesting meat behind it. You want to expand upon that a bit?
Yeah, I was pretty interested in that too, Caleb. I thought initially I had the reaction I think many people do. Well, mobile is inherently more insecure. I think a couple of things. The iPhone and Android, but it's specifically iPhone and some other technologies, have some built-in security. Now, up to now, we haven't thought maybe it was strong enough. I think that IBM and other enterprises are working with the providers of these technologies to strengthen them. But the fact that they have tightly controlled ecosystems does make them the potential of having strong security. The other piece, though, clearly, is the built-in sensors of phones. We've got, you know, accelerometers. We've got multiple cameras. Sometimes we have things that detect fingerprints, proximity. All of those things can be used for biometric position, GPS, to transmit additional data to your systems that really help you overall provide more security. So by knowing all about who's using the phone and where they're using it and how they're using it, this is, I think, the idea behind more security coming from mobile devices.
Well, I mean, ultimately, we all have a focus on them right now, right? And that's also where a lot of both innovative investments going as well as investment in individual companies. The other thing that really strikes me about mobile phones is we assume out of the gate that they're not sterile environments. I mean, you know, how many times, you know, 8-10 years ago, you go get a new job, someone hands you the laptop and says, hey, here's your laptop. It has all the access to the corporate environment that you need, and it has all the applications on it. And, you know, those were all sterile applications where they probably had relationships with every vendor. Now you show up at work, you bring your own mobile device, which has who knows what applications on it, and you download them from $1.99 from an app store. you know, this whole concept now of I've got to actually put security into the application, I think, is fascinating, and we'll probably end up on, you know, we'll probably end up thinking about our traditional laptops in new ways here eventually as well. But another key issue with mobile devices is determining whether the user has registered the device for access to a specific application. What mechanisms ensure that the device and the app are actually registered? And do these techniques provide a quick way to kind of revoke access when people leave or the device is lost or stolen?
Yeah, actually, as you were talking there about what else is happening in mobile, I was thinking about this use case. So in the case of just briefly back on employee-owned devices, companies can require special things like strong passwords and also can install endpoint managers on them to ensure that they haven't been compromised. And that is important. But this technique of registration, this applies both to customers and employees. And so this is actually pretty neat. What you can do is have a mechanism where when you start using an application, you maybe could say use a laptop and go to the website and say, I want to register a phone to this particular application. The registration page will generate a QR code that you scan with your phone, and when you do that, then this is a one-time code, and that phone becomes registered for that application for that person. So this is a key thing. We've linked the phone, the application, and the user all at the same time, and this lets us later go back and revoke app access. That is, the company can do it, or the user can do it. They can revoke access to this particular phone registered on a new phone if it's lost or when they trade phones out, and it's very powerful. There's a developer at IBM's Australia Development Lab, Shane Whedon, who has developed many of these technologies. They use a technology called OAuth that is an industry standard, but IBM has an implementation. He has a great demo of this, and as well as provides online access to his demo. And I'll have you post a link to that to his blog after our podcast here.
Absolutely, we'll put that in the description of the podcast, so that'll be out there, in about an hour here. So let's also talk about identity and access, which of course is a primary concern for both cloud and mobile. What aspect to kind of the typical identity and access is so critical, and what's different about it when we think about it in these environments?
Well, I think on the cloud side, What you want to do is have a single sign-on manager, something like IBM Access Manager for Web, IBM Security Access Manager for Web, that does single sign-on against multiple cloud instances. So this, in the private cloud environment, you want to make sure that you have access control to all the cloud instances that's uniform, and so that you can understand who's logging into some. Say they may be logged into multiple clouds simultaneously. You want to be able to gather that information and understand it, and then so you put this in front of each cloud or in front of the whole cloud infrastructure. That's one way to gather it. Along something that I haven't talked about much, but is a key piece there, is to collect all the data from this system as well as others and send it to your security intelligence server. You need to be able to understand all the data you're collecting to really see if you have security threats. On the mobile side, this is where there's very interesting technology now called context-based authentication or authorization, sometimes called risk-based access. IBM has a product with that name that's a part of our Access Manager family. So context-based authorization will take information from the user's phone. So it'll find out where they are by the GPS or Wi-Fi or even cellular tower. It sends that. It can send other biometric information that is collected that we talked about earlier. And this is combined with information that the company may have in databases. So you might have the usage pattern of that user. Maybe they typically use the phone in the Northeast United States, but if they're now all of a sudden trying to access a corporate app from North Africa or Europe or something like that, then that might be at variance to your policy. So we have a lot of data that we can collect, again, from the mobile device and also from other systems. The context-based authorization system creates a risk score, and the risk score then can be used to say, require additional authentication. It might say, well, you logged in with a password, but now we need to see something biometric, or maybe a one-time password needs to be sent and used. Or maybe the risk is so high, the risk score simply says, you can't do this transaction. You're trying to withdraw money from a bank account, the phone just seems to be 1,000 miles from where it was an hour ago. We're not going to allow it, because there's strong evidence of fraud in this case. And so this connects very much with your fraud prevention systems. Very powerful technology.
So, we've looked at a bunch of different things about cloud and mobile. Where could we go to find out more details on, you mentioned a few different IBM solutions in the mix here. So where would we find those? And also, what's kind of your view on what comes next with all of this?
Well, IBM has several new product updates this year that I, of course, can't discuss at this point. But to keep abreast of them, just look at the IBM Security website. And the URL is easy to remember. It's ibm.com/security. So I'm certainly following that myself. Also, IBM has this great YouTube security channel where you can see lots of interesting videos. I believe both you and I have a few on there, but there's lots of other great experts. And so you can certainly see what IBM is doing in this area, as well as what kind of trends we see in the industry. And finally, I think that people want to stay monitor your blog and your channel on this podcasting system, so to see who else you bring in. Just on a personal note, I'm speaking about some of these same topics at a seminar on cybersecurity later this week in San Jose, Costa Rica. And there I'm going to focus on the role of security information and event management in security, along with the special considerations that are needed by cloud and mobile. So I see a lot of continued development in this area, but the basic patterns for securing cloud and mobile, I think, have been established, and the important thing for companies to do is get some expert help, figure out what they need to do, and start implementing them.
All right. Well, David, thanks a lot. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me, especially when we think about cloud and mobile, is first of all how they're we often have to think about these things one and the same, right? I mean, the point here that you're making is cloud is probably the back end to a lot of these mobile applications. And, of course, the second piece of this is we have to make sure the frameworks are in place, because a lot of these cloud solutions are standing up, coming down, and changing on the fly without necessarily having human intervention. So if we don't have the framework in place and the automation in place, we're not going to have the security structure in place that we need either.
I think you said it very well, Caleb. I agree completely.
All right, David. Well, thank you again. And to keep track of what David's doing, again, he'll be kind of down in San Jose, Costa Rica later this week. But you can also follow both what David and his peers are up to at ibm.com/security. Thanks again for joining.
This content was provided for informational purposes only. The opinions and insights discussed are those of the presenter and guests, and do not necessarily represent those of the IBM Corporation. Nothing contained in these materials or the products discussed is intended to, nor shall have the effect of, creating any warranties or representations from IBM or its suppliers, or altering the terms and conditions of any agreement you have with IBM. The information presented is not intended to imply that any actions taken by you will result in any specific result or benefit, and it should not be relied on in making a purchasing decision. IBM does not warrant that any systems, products, or services are immune from, or will make your enterprise immune from, the malicious or illegal contact of any party. All product plans, directions, and intent are subject to change or withdrawal without notice. References to IBM products, programs, or services do not imply that they will be available in all countries in which IBM operates. IBM, the IBM logo, and other IBM products and services are trademarks of the International Business Machines Corporation in the United States, other countries, or both. Other company, product, or services names may be trademarks or service marks of others.